Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We're coming to you live from VOA studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening we'll look at the toppling of two longtime African leaders by mass protests. What next for other longtime autocrats on the continent? And with us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Macori, host of VOA's Africa 54. Vincent, welcome to come back to the show again.
Thank you very much.
Welcome. And joining us from Durban, South Africa, is regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas. Good evening, Vincent, and our listeners.
Okay, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're very much welcome. As I said, gentlemen, tonight we're looking at how some leaders are just being toppled by mass protests. Sudan's military overthrew President Omar al-Bashir on Thursday amid increasingly bloody protests over his repressive 30-year rule and the deteriorating economy. Al-Bashir's fall came just over a week after protests in Algeria forced the resignation of that North African country's long-ruling, military-backed president, Abdelaziz Bouteflika. Now, Vincent, is this a sign of Arab Spring 2.0?
Very likely, because, people have a way in which they get inspired by events that happen, and therefore it wouldn't be surprising that people in other countries where they feel they're being oppressed would pick up from this and get out on the streets. And one of the lessons that people have learned from here is that if you, you have sustained protest, if you're willing to take the risk and put yourself out there and dare the system, somewhere along the way it will crack. As we've seen in Sudan, of course, Bashir, as usual, was full of himself, trying to intimidate the citizens, as he has done in the past. But I think there was a tipping point where the citizens now dared him and came out in droves, in hundreds of thousands of numbers, to literally the front of the military base where he is housed. And I think they were telling him, if you want, kill all of us, but life is not worth living with you as president. And at that point, the military realized that at the end of the day, the masses are more powerful than the military. The military come from the people, and the military do not come from space. They have sustained Bashir, they have protected him, but a time comes where even those people with guns realize you cannot murder the entire population of Sudan on behalf of one man, and therefore they took the action.
Suleiman, the conditions that prevailed in Algeria and in Sudan are quite ripe in other countries and on some countries on the continent. What do you see this as having a ripple effect, strengthening those people who are calling for their autocratic leaders to give way?
No doubt about it, because actually, though we are looking at Algeria and Sudan, we should take into account that we have just also had a revolution in Angola, Zimbabwe, DRC. You can also count Ethiopia on. There have just been massive people-led changes in this country, in these countries. So it is a continuation, and it is a fact. The facts are on the wall. The facts are that, number one, many of these leaders have overstayed. Number two, many of them are out of touch. Number three, we are in the 21st century. The challenges of this century are intricate, and they are out of touch with these. These challenges, not only being challenges, being intricate. Remember, the 21st century is more open, more globalized, more urbanized. People are more connected. There are more modern forms of communication. People are easy to mobilize. So given the raging problems on the continent, and given the century we are in, people have been pushed on the wall. They are forced to fight back. They don't want only to survive, but they want to live a meaningful life in their own countries, where surely they have got a share, an equal share with those who have captured their states, with those who have turned their countries into personal states, with those who have turned their countries into countries which are occupied, whereby we have relegated them to being to paying reparations to them for whatever reasons which they see. So I think it is time up. The clock is moving slowly, but I think there is a direction that people on the continent are fed up. And whether they don't do it now, but it is very clear that since the conditions are the same, even those countries where they still long time leadership, oppressive leadership, I think it is pointing to the direction that those who are fighting are energized, and I think we are more solidified now. We should expect changes in more countries in sub-Saharan Africa.
Vincent, these protests in Algeria and Sudan seem to have learned something from the Arab Spring. Now, for instance, in Sudan, protest organizers quickly denounced the army's takeover and vowed to continue rallies until a civilian transitional government is formed, raising the possibility of a clash with the military. The same thing happened in Nigeria. They didn't want the guy who is supposed to take over right now. So is this maturing of the protesters, or what's happening here?
I mean, people have been observing what has happened in the countries where the Arab Spring happened, and they realized that it's not about taking off the head of the snake. You needed to take off, to dismantle the whole system, because then what you have is just a replacement of the head, but to have the entire system intact. And people don't want that. They realize that at the end of the day, after some time, the same situation comes back. You're still dealing with the same autocratic system, because it's a system. So in Sudan, you could see there was a kind of an educated masses. These are educated masses that are saying, from the beginning, they were saying, we want Bashir and his system gone. If you listen to the voices of the people, they were saying, we want Bashir and the system gone. They were not just asking for the end of Mr. Bashir. So one thing that has to be learned is that you have to look beyond the person who represents that system and dismantle from the roots, you know, that entire system. And that's what is going to cause this clash. The citizens are saying, thank you, but no thank you. It's not enough to replace Bashir with his deputy, who is also an ICC indictee. Not that ICC matters anyway, but the fact is that they kind of are seen from the same prism. They're the same people. You need real change. Real change means entire system is cleaned and swept away, and you create a completely new outlook of a government that is a civilian and that is probably going to bring some semblance of democracy to that country.
Yeah, Suleiman, because the one who's taking over in Sudan now, the defense minister, he himself is, as Avicen says, an ICC indictee. He's under sanctions by the U.S. for atrocities committed in Darfur. So would it make a difference just changing from one to the other?
No. Actually, as you have put it, one of the lessons learned from the Arab Spring and those other places which have tried to have revolutions or reforms is that they don't want to be hijacked. Why? Because one of the techniques used by these long-time leaders is the capture of the institutions. So what the new revolutionaries have done, they have operated outside the normal institutions, because the normal institutions have been captured. The other political parties have been silent. The journalists have been silent. The civil society has been silent. The security institutions have been silent. So they have said not to work under those ones. They have worked outside all those institutions. So they are totally new, and they want to reform the whole system, because through those institutions, the long-time leaders have been able to compromise them, to divide and rule, and in the process, elongate themselves in power. So now the population has realized that these are one and the same people. So they want a complete revamp of the institution, the complete revamp of the political, social, and economic systems within this particular country, which is a positive sign, but we don't know whether we'll be able to get it, because these regimes are also very much entrenched.
I see. Vincent, you mentioned earlier about the role of the armed forces, not only in Sudan and Algeria. Wherever there has been this mass protest, and the military has had to side with the protesters for the thing to succeed, why does it take them so long to wake up and support the masses?
Of course, they are lulled and in a way blinded by the whatever benefits they're given by the regime. Many times, actually, they just those whatever goodies benefit only the senior military men, and those senior military men use the military system of command system, where soldiers are first and foremost supposed to obey the orders of their commanders, and they follow, that is the oath every soldier takes. It's like you take the orders from the commander. But somewhere along the way, even then, the foot soldiers come to realize that we're following orders to sustain just a few people in the system so that they can continue benefiting themselves. It takes a little longer because the military training, if you know, it tends to transform a person into a subservient, obedient person. That's all a soldier is supposed to learn, that you're supposed to just obey the orders of the commander.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time before the normal, the ordinary soldiers, the foot soldiers and lower cadre soldiers start to realize, hey, look, those masses, those are our fathers and sisters and mothers and aunties, and we are being sent to kill them over and over the years so we can sustain one person with his friends and cronies and family members. So once some of the senior members come to realize there is restlessness in the ranks of the military, then they have to cave in. Because otherwise, then you're going to have some low-level officers, some major somewhere, some captain, some lieutenant, mobilizing some soldiers and overthrowing the government and killing all those generals. So once they realize that now there is restlessness within the lower ranks of the military, then they act. But it takes long. It takes longer because of the nature of the military structures.
Yeah, Suleiman, because in both instances, there are those who have had to pay with their lives, killed by the so-called forces. So do you agree that they have to, because their nature is to obey orders for some time, they take their time?
It's true. The military discipline demands that you obey orders and you don't question. After when you question, you are shot straight away. So it takes time, as Vincent has said, for them to come to life, to come to the level of the people, to come to realize that they are also suffering like other citizens. And then there is also for other countries. There are other countries like in East Africa, countries like Rwanda, countries like Uganda, where the armies, the security forces have been personalized, where you find almost they are dominated by a particular tribe which belongs to the president. So, and the particular groups, particular families. So you find in such cases also it is very, very difficult to get the army to turn around, because they are totally captured, they are part of the system, they are enjoying the benefits of the leader in power. So otherwise, this one, as Vincent has said, it is so difficult because of command, it takes a long time. That is why even in Sudan and in Algeria, it took time for the military to show its side. And eventually, when they realized that now it is too late, the pressure is too much, that is when they took steps. But we are yet to see whether the generals will be able to accept the demands of the people, which wants a total reform.
Mm-hmm. And actually, sometimes the loyalty to the regime or to the military ruler or a dictator sometimes is not necessarily for everybody motivated by any material gain, because what happens is that leaders, politicians know it, that human beings by nature can be conditioned to follow they can be almost like you can create a cult following among people. And soldiers especially are very susceptible to this, and those guys who lead them know the secret, and you can transform these people almost to near zombies whose job is to follow, even when they gain nothing. And it just takes some time later. It's almost after some time, people wake up to the reality and just come to reckon that this is not for their benefit. This is not for the benefit of their relatives and wives and mothers who are out there. Even if you live in a military base, somehow eventually you come to realize that the citizens are not the enemy. Because remember, some of this training, and I've been closer to some of this, even with the police, why do police sometimes act so ruthlessly? In some of our countries, the police, first thing you're trained at the police training is the civilian is the enemy. They do use that kind of a language. Civilian is an enemy. So when the civilian is out on the street, you're sent to the street, you're going to deal with an enemy, and you're supposed to be ruthless. So it takes time for people to realize, no.
I see.
Perhaps it's not the civilian.
Well, for those who are just joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we are coming to you live from the Voice of America's studios here in Washington. Tonight we are discussing people's protests and the fall of two of Africa's long-ruling leaders. Our panelists are Vincent Makori, my colleague here, and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst, and I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio One. Now, Vincent, you alluded to people waking up. Now, let's look at the other side. Those who have been toppled in recent times, Mugabe was in his 90s, Bouteflika was in his 80s, Bashir has ruled for three decades. Now, there are leaders who fall in that category in age-wise or the length of their tenure or of their rule. Are they also waking up? Are they going to have a sense of, hey, maybe something is happening?
you must be joking, Douglas. Yeah. You know, leaders who have who stay too long in power never wake up. They live in their own dream. They live in a world of fantasy. That's why they never learn from what happens in the neighboring country. They get to a point. First, you have to realize when a person gets to a point where he's been in power for 20 years, 25 years, he has come to believe that he's the best thing that ever happened in this universe for his country. So first, he has no regard. He has disdain for the fellow citizens. He has no respect for his people. That is why some leaders have been known to literally live abroad and they go home occasionally
for elections
to be endorsed and go back to Switzerland or whatever the case may be. When you stay in power for 20 years or 30 years, you know very well that that person believes that is the only person that can ever rule that country. So he lives in a kind of a universe that is not necessarily the same as you. And with time, they come to think that the country is their personal property. They have a birthright to being the president, and they communicate that to their cronies and make them believe that this is for me. This thing was made for me. And the only way they always go out, which is unfortunate. I mean, if they can open their eyes, they would see that. It's always in a violent way. It's either they're overthrown and killed, or they're overthrown and humiliated. None of them ends up well, because they never allow themselves to wake up. You can go around the continent and show me one person who said, it is time to
leave.
They never. Yeah. They have to be pushed out of the house, out of the door, and kicked into prison or to exile.
So, Suleiman, your take on that one? Will some of them wake up?
Actually, you are talking of leaders like Biya of Cameroon, Obiang of Equatorial Guinea, Museveni of Uganda, Kagame of Rwanda, Cruises of Burundi, then Chad, then Togo, then Gabon. Some of them are young, but the mentality is the same. You are looking at narcissists, people who are self-glorifying, as my brother Vincent has said. They are in a world of their own. He says, and from his wife, he's told he's a gift from God. That is the talk in Uganda now, that he says he is a gift from God. But also, you have to sympathize with these people, because some of them, the background is so bad. Some of them come from a marginalized and poor background. all of a sudden to be fired into such heavy responsibility. They forget themselves. So you can't think of them waking up. Instead, they think, as the different, I said, they are more intelligent than the others. They can't see that the countries are going down. They can't see that, for example, in Uganda, as the different was saying, it is the military, the security institutions which are holding them in power. But these guys don't even have military boots to put on. They don't have even uniform. They don't have even houses where to stay. They are even better paupers than the ordinary man. But because, as you mentioned, I said, they have been conscientized that the major institution they are in, they are propelling them, they are continuing to obey orders because that is what the institution demands. Otherwise, as you mentioned, I said, let us not expect these people to change. The population, the people have to continue struggling. They have to force them out by force using any available means in every country where they are still reigning.
And you know, Douglas, one of the other problems that leads to them to stay in this continuous state of deep sleep is the people around them. They're cronies.
The cronies.
The cronies always make them believe that people love you. You know, everybody loves you.
You are the best person.
We are the best person. I mean, we had, for example, even a situation in Kenya where the long, you know, the president was there after Kenyatta, that was Moi, ruled for 24, nearly 30 years. And some of his ardent supporters used to make him feel like he's the best thing that ever happened to the country. They worshipped him, and he believed that he was that kind of a special gift to the country. But anybody who had his eyes open would see that the institutions were collapsing. We had even things that used to exist during the colonial period, Kenya Railways, Kenya Cooperative Creameries, the Kenya Meat Committee, all those things had collapsed. Everything collapsed. The regime just revolves around himself, his cronies, his family members. But the people around him, of course, told him that you are the best thing for this country.
You're doing great.
Despite the fact that across the country, you could see underdevelopment. Everything was going backwards, and there was massive corruption and plundering of the economy. So it's unfortunate because the people around them never tell them that, you know what, maybe it's time to leave, or maybe it's time to do something to change the country for the better.
I see. As we wind up, Suleiman Hall, I was going to say, there are those who point out that with these mass protests succeeding in certain countries, it may be a formula for other countries who have who want to change things in those countries. And one thing, one advantage of the mass protests is that you don't need foreign help. You just mobilize the people, and they can, if they are resilient enough, strong enough, tough enough, you pull it off. Is this formula maybe the way to go for in those some of those countries?
It is. The only thing you have to add there is that actually in many of these countries they have been lucky because they have also been helped by their diaspora. The diaspora has had also a contribution. They have staged massive protests. They have given. They have energized them as they protest out of the country. And secondly, they have also had a good, the mobilizers have been able to penetrate the intelligentsia, the elites. Because in many of these countries, the changes have been delayed by the leadership compromising the elites. First of all, as different I said, one of the problems which these leaders have created is that, number one, they create poverty, extreme poverty. They impoverish everybody. Then there is inequality. Because there is a lot of poverty and inequality, they are able to compromise a section of the population. The section they have compromised most are the educated people. In all these countries where they have lived, the educated people have been compromised. They are their mouthpiece. They are the ones, as you say, they are the ones surrounding them. These leaders, they are the ones who are keeping on praising them and giving them wings. So that is one of the problems. So one of the lack is that the diaspora has helped many of these countries like Algeria and Sudan. You've got voices also coming from outside. It has also been a very good contribution to the situation in Canada.
Okay.
Yeah, I wanted to add that, you know, one of the characteristics of all the leaders who've stayed too long in power is arrogance and a certain level of disdainfulness for the citizens. Then the lack of love for their country. Mm-hmm. The irony is that they will tell you they love their country so much. But you cannot love your country when you do not care about what the country will look like after you leave.
Mm-hmm.
And they are guided by a level of ignorance, arrogance, where you feel that I am invincible. Mm. Nothing will ever happen to me. What tells anybody that they could not drop dead today, get a heart attack or something happens? Now, to presume that you will be in power for the rest of your life is to play God and to think that you are different than other human beings.
Mm.
To be in a country of millions of people and not think there's anybody who's worth being president except you. It's so mind-boggling, because how much can you disrespect the entire population of your country that you believe that for 20, 30, and perhaps the foreseeable future, you are the only one, and that actually the people around you believe so, when the reality is you're just a human being. You could drop dead
anytime.
Mm-hmm. And also there's the fact that the irony is some of them overthrew governments in order to get to power because they believe those governments were repressive.
Yeah. You know? So lastly, 1 minute, Suleiman, do you think this will work? Because it didn't work in Egypt, although they had that revolution. It doesn't seem to be working in Zimbabwe. Will this Algeria and Sudan work out? Very briefly.
It's a $1 million question. We have to pray for the people, because once the whole institution has, the whole country has been destroyed politically, socially, economically, it is so difficult once the dictator falls. All the countries where people have overthrown, as recent has done, that is the biggest disadvantage one can be to his country. When you overstay, you are destroying the country because you don't know how you leave it.
I see. Vincent?
Yeah, so I think one hopes that some of those leaders across the continent will look at what has happened in all these countries and realize that the country is larger than them, that this country is not about them and their families, but the country is about the entire population of millions of people. Mm. If you really are patriotic enough, if you love your country, you build institutions that allow for the continuity of good leadership. If you're a good leader, you can never be afraid of leaving power, retiring respectfully. You cannot be good for the country forever. Nobody, however great you are, no human being can be the best thing for the country for all years. No, it's actually a lack of the love for your country that will make you want to stay forever in power.
So where do we import these good leaders from? They seem to be in short supply on the continent.
They will happen.
You know that you have to be inclusive. They have to be democratic. They have to allow the people to be included in their governance so that they can live any time and they live continuity.
Yes.
The way Mandela did, not just to monopolize one person for 30 years.
I see.
That is the lesson they should know.
Well, we are out of time. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, host of VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Our producer, as always, has been Jackson Mvunganya, and our engineer tonight was Charleston Mock. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any or part of this program, you can still access it on the internet by going to our main website at www.vnews.com. Click on programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, wishing you all the best.
This is VOA News.